I'm looking for things that are just going to provide good, stable cash flow from the moment I buy it.
We know that building wealth comes from owning businesses and making investments. Yet why still do nearly half of businesses fail in the first 5 years, and why do others lose it all in their investments?
Welcome to the Wealth Watchers Podcast, your resource for building a massive net worth. We bring real stories from real people who are experts in business and investing, who will share secrets and actionable strategies to amassing wealth and achieving success. Brought to you by Happy Camper Capital. And now, your hosts, Justin Hoggett and Adam Lendy.
Welcome back to the Wealth Watchers Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Lendy. With me is my co-host, Justin Hoggett. Justin, what's going on?
Hey, Adam. You know, it's pretty exciting as we move forward into the new year. We have a new park that will be under contract here in just a moment. Not going to say which one it is yet, but definitely exciting for our team and us to give another opportunity soon.
Well, and not to create too much hype over it, but we actually can't share what this one is because of the type of investment. So if anybody wants to know, they have to get on our list and go to happycampercapital.com and sign up on the investor list. So we're excited about that one. Also super excited about the RV show we went to last week. It's got me thinking of lots of places I want to spend my money.
There's a lot of cool floor plans. It is amazing what they do with the space in those little boxes.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Some really neat stuff out there. And obviously understandable why everybody's getting into it now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, great. Well, let's bring in our guest today. He's a multifamily syndicator. Also an author, Matt Piccini. Matt, how are you today?
I'm great, guys. How are you?
Great. Thanks for coming on.
Where are you joining us from, Matt?
I live in Brooklyn, New York.
Oh, got it. How's the weather up there?
It's very, very cold today. We've just got dumped on with a bunch of snow.
Oh, sure. We've got a team member not far from you. So that's, yeah, he got a foot of snow too. So, we're out in Denver. It's fortunately a pretty nice day here, about 60 degrees outside. I'm actually kind of bummed to be inside, but glad to be talking to you. And this is one of my favorite things to do.
Nice.
So I have to get out and play after this. Matt, we'd like to obviously get into, you know, what it is you do and learn a little bit more about your book and about your business. But beforehand, obviously, we want to get to know the man behind the curtain. So could you share a little bit of background as to, you know, kind of what brought you to where you are and why you do what you do?
Sure. I grew up in Orlando, Florida. I moved to New York to pursue a career in theater. I was a professional actor for 5 years in 15 different shows across the United States. I started tinkering around with computers back in 1997 and fell in love with that, had a passion for that, and started doing that full time. Fast forward to 2001, the dot-com bubble burst. My business was imploding because nobody was spending money on any digital products, no digital marketing. And the clients hadn't gone out of business. I mean, there was a lot that just completely went out. So right at that time, the landlord for the apartment that I was renting told me I had 90 days to get out of my apartment. So that was kind of really rude awakening. I mean, what was I going to do living in New York City, trying to find a new place with basically no job and no real income? I ended up getting a job at Showtime, the cable television channel. They were a client of mine. And I was going to rent an apartment, but my sister found on a bulletin board, a co-op apartment for sale. So I actually went ahead and bought property instead of renting. It wasn't in my desired neighborhood. It was about 30 minutes further north than I wanted to be, but I went ahead and did that. And two and a half years later, I sold the property and saw my initial investment quadruple. And I said, wow, this real estate thing, there's really something there. I need to figure out how I can do that again. And so that's when I first started getting involved in real estate, did it as a hobby for 10 years. And I've been doing it full-time for a little over 6 years now. So full-time real estate investor.
Great. And so in those first 10 years, what kind of deals were you doing?
So it was really a hobby for me. So it was going from first doing some things, like I had mentioned, the primary residence, I bought another primary residence. And then I bought some land in Connecticut. I bought a vacant piece of land, except I had a whole bunch of trees. And then eventually we cut the trees down and built a house there. And I started renting that house out. So it was initial intention was for it to be a vacation rental, but to defray my cost, I was going to rent it out from time to time, but it really ended up being a full-time rental by the time I was done with it because of some other things that were going on in my life. So it was a great opportunity. And then I got involved in sort of the single family buy and hold and some fix and flips. But to really get this thing going to scale and for it to be something that I could do full-time, I went into the multifamily syndication world.
Yeah. And was that when you exited your other job and took this on, or was there any overlap in there?
No, there was no overlap. I moved from Brooklyn to Miami, Florida a little over 6 years ago. My wife got a tremendous job opportunity completely out of the blue, but it was in Miami. So we decided to go down there. And it was at that time that I decided to make the transition from the corporate life I had been living in New York to, and I had been working in digital marketing and was kind of burned out after doing that for 18 years, working at these very large agencies, to doing real estate, which is really where my passions lied at that time and still to this day.
Yeah. Now, you know, we talked to a lot of people who syndicate, you know, and some, most do multifamily. That's pretty common in your space, but you know, everybody's kind of got their own reasons they got into it or the things that brought them in. What was it specifically that brought you into it?
I was looking to generate passive income. I'm sure you've heard this a million times, but you know, I read that little purple book, right? The Robert Kiyosaki book. And developing passive streams of income seemed something very interesting to me and something that I wanted to do. Having moved to Miami, it was difficult for me. My initial thought on that move was, hey, maybe I'll get a job at another advertising agency down there. And once I got down there, it became very clear to me that that was not going to really work out the way that I had hoped. In New York, I was managing large teams of 100 people or more on these big brands, Coca-Cola, Verizon, Visa. And the opportunities in Miami, while good, were just at much smaller agencies. There was maybe 5 to 10 people at any particular agency. So it was just on a very different scale. That was number one. Number two, I knew that we weren't going to be, I was pretty sure that we weren't going to be in Miami forever. So if we were going to be, you know, we would either maybe move back to New York or maybe move somewhere else, based on what was happening with my wife and her career. I wanted to have something that I would be able to sort of do anywhere. So I assumed, you know, I just thought about it and I was like, listen, if I can create passive income from multiple different streams, it really doesn't matter where I live. But then for my actual job, I'd like to do something where it's sort of location agnostic. And so that's what this is. I mean, I do not invest in multifamily properties in New York City, which is where I live. I mean, wish I could. It would be great. It's a great market up here, but a very different market. And so for me, I wanted to find something that allowed me sort of the flexibility and freedom when it comes to my time and also my location.
Yeah, just I didn't intend to dive into this as quick, but you said, obviously, you don't invest in New York City. Is that accessibility or does any of that have to do with regulatory concerns up there?
I don't have any particular regulatory concerns. I would say that there are, from a political standpoint, there are certain restrictions on depending on, you know, what type of property you're purchasing. That has never been a deciding factor. What's really been a deciding factor for me has been the cost, right? The cost of the properties here versus the rent that is charged for it doesn't make sense. The numbers don't really work out. We were in Miami for 2 years. We went to Boston, Massachusetts. So we were in Boston for 4 years, the same sort of situation. I mean, Boston as a whole is a wonderful real estate market. If you're looking for preservation of capital, I can't think of a better place to invest. They have so many different sectors of employment. It's a great place. But when it comes to purchasing a property, if you're looking for cash flow, which is one of my large, you know, the probably the biggest thing I'm looking for, it's hard to find cash flowing properties up here. They're more long-term appreciation plays, which then gets into the debate of whether that's actually investing or speculating. So I'm looking for things that are just going to provide good, stable cash flow from the moment I buy it.
That makes sense. And just obviously not knowing that market because I haven't researched it or that space, but what sort of cap rates do you see in New York City?
It varies widely. I'll tell you this. The property that I live in right now, which I love, we rented it for the 6 years that we had been living not in New York. And from a cash flow perspective, based on that rent, I mean, it was cash flow positive. But based on the amount of equity that I have in the property, not a great cash on cash return, but I'm factoring in what the current valuation is. The valuation of the property like skyrocketed. So it just goes into that sort of like, you know, appreciation play. But then what if this market, you know, crashes, you know, next week or next year and the valuation goes way down? I mean, the cash on cash would still be the same, assuming the rent would be around the same, but it's just, it's different because I live here, but you know, cap rates maybe, you know, in the twos or threes, you know, it's super compressed. Yeah, super compressed.
Yeah. So where do you play?
So most of the properties that I have are in Dallas, Houston, and Kansas City. Those are the three markets where I've been a general partner. You know, I have, you know, a little over 2,300 doors that I'm a general partner in, but I also passively invest in a lot of opportunities. So I have around a little over 6,000 doors that I've invested in passively. And those really are across the entire United States, not really anything in the Northeast currently. Actually, that's not true. I have some things in Pennsylvania, but, other than that, most of it is in the South, Midwest, Southeast. Yeah.
So when you jumped into multifamily from the single family space, what do you think was the biggest hurdle that you experienced?
There were so many hurdles, but the biggest one for me was just being okay from a mental perspective, you know, throwing a couple of zeros at the end when it comes to things like purchase price. Not including the property in Brooklyn, right? I was buying properties and flipping properties and doing things, you know, anywhere in the, let's say, $100,000 to $500,000 price range, right? And then when I went to multifamily, the first property that I bought, the purchase price was just a little under $10 million. So it's a big gap. As you guys know, you know, syndication, the great thing about it is the fact that I didn't need to have all that capital to go ahead and do that. I pooled my resources together with other investors, but that was a big hurdle.
Yeah. A lot of, you know, seems like that's the route of a lot of real estate investors, also like myself, that took single family to multifamily and then now elsewhere. But what advice might you have for those people that are looking to make that leap that, you know, maybe don't have a huge long list of investors or the knowledge of multifamily directly?
Well, in that case, it's really, even not in that case, but just in general, right? It's all about partnerships. So if you don't have a large amount of capital by yourself or through a large investor list, if you can partner with somebody who does, that'll help you with that hurdle. The same thing with experience. Just because you don't have a lot of experience doesn't mean that you might not be able to have a team member who does have a lot of experience. For my first deal, I brought somebody in who had a ton of experience, also had a pretty good investor list that he could pull on. Luckily, from my perspective, you know, I raised about 75% of the capital on that deal. So my investor list did pretty well. Wasn't quite sure how it would go, but it turned out good. But having another experienced partners was key. And so as I was going through the acquisition process, even though I had done a number of real estate deals, I had never done anything at that large of a scale. And there were questions that came up and bumps along the road. And so having a trusted partner that I could go to and you know, partner with and utilize his knowledge, was phenomenal. I couldn't have done it without that.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, of course, we, don't always suggest everyone get involved in these deals, you know, especially as what we're trying to do as syndicators. You know, we want the passive investors. How do you, you know, pitch to your investors some of those deals, and what are you looking for them, and what kind of opportunities are you providing?
Yeah, I have certain criteria, certain metrics that I look for as a passive investor. I think I mentioned earlier, 2/3 of my portfolio I'm passive in. So as a active investor, as a syndicator or sponsor on these deals, I want to be able to give my investor group the same sort of returns that I would expect. So I have those sort of thresholds that I look for, which includes a strong cash on cash return and a healthy return on investment overall. And I look for a investment horizon of around 5 to 7 years.
And is there in multifamily, is there a particular class you're looking at specifically?
I've been involved in a lot of B and C class properties. As we're seeing the compression in cap rates across the board, we're also seeing a compression of the spread between the different classes. So meaning, you know, where in a particular market, let's say the C was selling at a, I'm just going to make up some numbers, a 10 cap, and then maybe you had a 7 cap for your B, C's were a 10 cap, B's were, let's say, a 7 cap, and let's say a 3 for A class, right? You're seeing everything compressed down now to like 4, right? The C's and the B's are getting compressed, I think, a lot more than the A's, which are also compressed. So therefore, we're starting to purchase properties now that are a little more on the B plus scale, and what may be in the cards for us in the next year or so would be an A class property. I'm starting to look at those and underwrite them. If we can find something, and you know, there's not that much of a cap rate difference between a B and an A or between a C and an A, it may make sense to go ahead and get an A asset. We wouldn't have the same sort of cash flow, but from a, you know, that would be a little bit of a longer term hold strategy as well.
I'm going to ask Justin's question maybe a different way, just because I'm curious to know kind of your own criteria. Because obviously, we as syndicators ourselves, we believe in, you know, really putting the best product out there for the investors, you know, and you know, like the book, The Hands Off Investor, is a fantastic one that everybody in our space should read, just so that they understand what the investors should be looking for, so that we can present the best product. That said, though, obviously this is a two-way street when we're vetting somebody. So what are some of the criteria you look at when you're vetting somebody to come bring in as an LP or limited partner?
Are you looking for specific like return metrics?
No. I'm curious actually, when you're vetting an LP, what it is you're looking for, you know, make sure that it's the right fit for you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I look at three things. So the first thing that I look at is who's the sponsor and what is their experience? What is their track record? And the first question I always ask people is if they're asking me about a deal, to give them advice on a deal, I say, how did you meet the person? You know, if someone reaches out to me through a random Facebook message or LinkedIn message, I'm probably going to be a lot less prone to investing with them as opposed to somebody that I met in person or was recommended to. You know, if Adam, you told me, hey, you know, this guy Justin is a really great syndicator, I've invested in deals with him before and it's given me a great return, that is phenomenal, and something that I look for. You know, personal referrals are awesome. So that's number one. Who is the sponsor, track record, how did I meet them, that sort of thing. The other thing I look at is the market. What is the market that they're investing in? And what are the metrics for that market look like in terms of population growth, employment growth, household income, that sort of thing. And then the third thing that I look at is what's the actual business plan for that deal? What are they doing? Is it a value add? Has it just been, you know, are the operations just completely out of control and they're going to come in and fix up the expenses? And what is that underwriting look like? And what assumptions are made? I mean, it's one of the things that I talk about in my book in detail, especially I have a back section of the book called The Backstage Toolbox, where I get into, look, this is how I look at rent growth, and this is how I look at vacancy, and this is, you know, how I look at reversion cap rates. And these are the questions that I'm asking and my philosophy on them.
And, you know, that's a good segue. Can you tell us a little bit about your book, you know, kind of what its message is and who it's intended for?
Sure. I used to run a meetup in Boston. I'll start a new one in Brooklyn as soon as things open back up. It's a bit shut down right now because of COVID. But in Boston, I would get hundreds of people literally at our meetup. It started off much smaller, but it grew. And I would have people coming up to me who were interested in investing passively as LPs in deals, just like I do, saying, hey, Matt, do you mind? Would you take a look at this for me and tell me what you think? And I would never tell people to do a deal or not to do a deal, but I would look at those sort of certain metrics and point them out to that investor and say, hey, I don't know, this rent growth of 10% every year seems a little aggressive. You might want to ask the sponsor why they did that. And there were so many people asking for my advice that it just became overwhelming. I didn't have enough time in the day. So I put together a what was going to be like a white paper, a little handbook. It ended up being about 70 pages that just talked about these metrics and the things that I look for in a deal. And once I got done with it and took a look at it, it was really, really dry and boring. I mean, really good information in there, but for especially someone who's just a passive investor, who's not really, you know, eating and breathing and sleeping this stuff, I think it was way too difficult to kind of understand. So what I did was I took that same information, but I sprinkled it in with the narrative of my life, which is kind of unique. I mean, I used to be an actor and then digital marketing. So I have some interesting stories. And in each of those stories that I tell, I impart that information in there. So as someone's going through the book, I have 18 different keystone concepts that I teach. And I teach them along the way that I learned them, right? And then I also have 60 different real estate definitions that I define in the book, and there's a glossary at the end. So it really ends up being a really great book for someone who's looking to passively invest to sort of get an understanding of these different concepts and these different metrics. And then at the end, like I said, there's a thing called the Backstage Toolbox, which really sort of breaks down like, hey, here's some great questions. Here's five questions to ask a sponsor about themselves, about the market, and about the deal. So 15 questions in total. And then I get into some real nitty-gritty sort of theory with the rent growth and household income and all that other kind of stuff.
I want to go back to your meetup real quick. What kind of meetup was it you held and or that you plan to start again in New York?
So it was a multifamily meetup. When I was in Miami, so when we first moved and I dived head first into real estate, I would go to meetups and RIAs, right? Those, the real estate investing associations. And I went to a bunch of them and everybody was wholesaling properties. Some people were flipping properties and nobody was doing multifamily. So I just had a hard time sort of finding other people who were interested. And I said, well, if I can't find it, I guess I'll just build it myself. So I built a meetup. I started a meetup in Miami. We were there for about a year after I started. We were there for 2 years. So this was about a year in, I started it. It was going pretty well, getting some good momentum. And then my wife, out of the blue, got a job opportunity, another one. So now in Boston. So when we moved to Boston, I was really happy to see that someone had started a multifamily meetup. They had only had like two or three sessions before, but there was already one existing. So I went there and I went for about two or three sessions and there was like around 20 people or so there, which was great. And the guy who was running it said, hey, Matt, I'm moving. I'm going to move to Texas. So do you want to take over the meetup? You're really the only guy that I know that's doing this full time. And, you know, would you be interested? And I said, sure. And so then I spent the next, you know, 2 to 3 years building that up over time. Telling people about it and building my network and just trying to spread the word about the meetup. And it started to gain traction after a while.
It sounds to me like a lot of if your book was inspired by the attendees, I'm guessing there's probably a lot of people who are just getting into the space and just kind of learning, you know, how to put a deal together.
Sure. So most of the people who were coming to the meetup were not full-time real estate investors. A lot of them had other jobs, but they were very interested in real estate. And a lot of them had small multifamily in the area. So duplex, triplex. I mean, the stereotypical person at my meetup had a triplex in Worcester. Worcester's a town about an hour west of Boston. I believe it's the second largest city in the state of Massachusetts. But you can find a price that would actually cash flow, or at least you could. Prices in Worcester have gone up over the past 4 years. But so a lot of these people did own some sort of multifamily, but not large scale, and most of the time not out of state. So through the education that we were providing through the meetup, I mean, a lot of the meetup was networking. but we would have speakers come. I would put together panels. I had a panel of, you know, should you, you know, the pros and cons of professional third-party property management versus self-management, or how about investing out of state? You know, I had three different people who had invested in different types of deals out of state. How did they feel about it? How did they overcome their fear? And so we would have many different special guests come in and talk about a lot of things around multifamily. And a lot of it would be focused around doing things out of state and syndications, so that people started to, I think, get familiar with it, understand it, get educated in it, and then start investing in it.
Great. Now going back to your book, of course, you mentioned there are keystone concepts in there. Do you have maybe one you could pick out and share with us today? Kind of maybe a teaser?
Sure. Well, keystone concept number one is don't trade your time for money. You know, I mean, you can always generate more money, right? You can make money, but you can't make time. So instead of working for money, if you can have your money work for you, I mean, it's basically, you know, what I learned from Kiyosaki, right? From Rich Dad, Poor Dad, generating those passive income streams. So that was my first keystone concept of, wow, this is the path I want to go down.
Great. Now, and obviously you took the path of being a GP, which is definitely, you know, it's definitely a job, no doubt about it. But you've mentioned, of course, you're 2/3 to 1/3. So is the goal for you to shift that to 100% passive?
I don't know that that's my goal. I really enjoy doing things. I think I would be bored if it was all limited partner stuff. And sure, I would probably do some charitable work, but you know, that would probably only go so far. So I would like to have something to do, and I enjoy doing the real estate. Like it's something that I'm passionate about, and I have a lot of fun doing, and I happen to think I'm very good at it as well. So I don't know if I'll ever shift it. I think that as my portfolio continues to grow, the percentage might become less because I'm, like I said, continuing to grow that passive income from a limited partner perspective. And most of that is in multifamily, but I'm starting to invest in mobile home parks and self-storage, you know, just dabbling in those a little bit. But also, you know, I invest in Broadway shows, which is a really specific and unique thing that I like doing. That's my wife's full-time job. She works in the theater, and I have that theatrical background. It's something I'm passionate about. So, you know, I'll probably grow that portfolio of investments as well.
I'm totally curious now to know what kind of return profile you're looking at, what sort of time horizon a Broadway show has.
So a Broadway show, only about 80% of Broadway shows actually recoup their initial investment. So we'll just start off with that. Like the risk reward profile is totally different. I do real estate as, you know, that's like 90% of my portfolio. Probably I haven't figured out the exact number, but somewhere around there, right? I'm not gonna be putting all my eggs in that Broadway basket. That being said, it's something that I enjoy and that I'm passionate about. My wife and I have a pretty good track record. We just won 2 Tony Awards this past year for shows that we produced, and we've invested in some really big hits, and we've had some misses too. But if it's something that you like and that you're passionate about and you have a little bit of risk tolerance, the returns can be asymmetrical. If you have a show that's doing really well, you know, you could see, you know, and this is all hypothetical, you could see doubling your money in 3 years, or you could invest in, you know, Hamilton or Phantom of the Opera and, you know, maybe see your returns in like, you know, hundreds or maybe even thousands of a percent ROI, depending on, you know, if the shows run for a very, very long time, you continue to participate in those distributions, right? So a lot of it is like, okay, how long does it run on Broadway? And if Broadway is the originating company, then a lot of times you'll get royalties in other tiers like tours, or if it's being done in other countries, things of that nature. So again, it depends exactly how it's put together, but you could be receiving additional you know, distributions from other productions that are going on. So it can be amazing, but it's super, super, super risky.
Yeah, it's interesting. So on keystone concept number one, of course, don't trade time for money. You know, simple enough said, right? You know, we all think we're getting passive income when we get into real estate investing. Reality is a lot of the time we're just buying ourselves jobs. So, you know, how do you suggest to the reader that they at least mitigate that?
Well, nowhere in the book do I suggest that people should do this as a full-time job. And the book is really written for people, I talk about in the introduction, who have jobs that they enjoy doing. And this is a way to generate additional passive income to be used for traveling or pay for their kids' education or maybe reduce their work hours. So because it is a job, if you're actively participating in these as a passive investor, I think, you know, that there is some time that needs to be spent up front, right? Vetting the person, vetting the deal, vetting the market. But once you've done that, you just sit back and hopefully the deal performs well. So that's something that I think I sort of talk about in the book a little bit, but it's not really a book to teach people how to actively invest in deals. It's really more from a passive perspective.
And the book's name is Backstage Guide to Real Estate. Is that due out soon? I think you said it's not out currently.
So it's available right now for pre-order.
Okay.
And then the official launch is February 9th, 2022. So whenever, I'm not sure when your podcast airs, but probably right about the time someone's listening to this.
Yeah. If you're hearing this episode now, it's likely 2 weeks away from release.
So if you hear it 2 weeks from release, I would say get the pre-order because it's on a mega, mega discount. But February 9th, it'll go to regular retail prices.
And where can you pre-order your book?
Well, you can get it anywhere that fine books are sold. But I would recommend people go to my website that has links on it. So the website's pacheni.com. I'm sure you'll put that in your show notes. But it's P like in Peter, ICHENY.com. And there's links from there to go ahead and purchase.
Perfect. Yeah. Well, the link will absolutely be in the show notes to get a copy of the book. And just to make sure that the right people are going to pre-order it, who is the ideal reader for this book? Who absolutely needs to, when they get done driving, click the link and pre-order?
It's for anybody who has an interest in real estate and is looking to find out information on how to look at deals and sort of vet deals and vet sponsors. And for those who are a little bit more active or a little more experienced in real estate, I'll say that the book starts off with really simple concepts like assets and liabilities. And, like, you know, we talked about that Keystone concept number one. But if you're further along in that journey and in that path, the later chapters, I talk about an air rights deal that I did and a 1031 exchange that I've done. So, and also the earlier chapters, I think, have entertaining stories. So I think it's going to be an enjoyable read for people. It's not one of those like real estate textbooks. There's a ton of good factual information in there, but it's an enjoyable read.
And when does the Backstage Guide to Broadway Show Investing come out?
that may be coming out at some point in the future. So you'll just have to sign up for my newsletter on my website and you'll find out.
Very well, Matt.
It's not being written quite yet, but maybe in the future.
That's right. Well, Matt, thank you so much for coming on and sharing today. Before we let you go, I'm going to turn it over to Justin for the Wealth Watchers Brain Pick.
All right.
All right, Matt, 5 quick questions for you. First one, what is your superpower or unique natural ability?
Persistence. I got 3 stories in the book actually about that persistence.
All right. And how does that relate in the book? Is it, you know, is it towards deals, getting the deal done?
Yeah. Well, so the stories talk about my background. I mean, that the first acting gig I got was because of persistence.
Okay.
One of my first jobs in New York City at the Hard Rock Cafe was because of persistence. And I got a job at Disney World when I was a kid because of persistence. So those stories are in there. But persistence is what helped me take down my first syndicated deal. And I talk about that and in detail in one of the chapters about how I, you know, put in an offer and then the people took it off the market. And I kept following up and eventually took the deal down.
Yeah, I can certainly relate. I've got my own stories about that and appreciate the importance of it.
Nice.
If you were to go back 3 to 5 years, what might you've done differently that you wish you could have?
You know, hindsight's always 20/20. Now knowing what the real estate market did, maybe I would have, purchased that. I let a lot of opportunities go because I didn't feel comfortable. My underwriting is pretty conservative. And now I've seen some of those deals coming back to market and see the valuations and what they're selling for. So like, I'm like, oh, wow, I should have bought that back then. But that only would have been having the knowledge that I have now, knowing for certain. And I didn't know for certain.
Yeah. Hindsight's great, isn't it?
Yeah.
And where are you headed in the next 3 to 5 years?
Well, I think only time will tell, but for me, it's really more about continuing to go on this journey of passive investing, continuing to grow my passive investment portfolio, and also showing others what I've done. I mean, I've gotten to a point right now where, you know, I'm not driving around a Maserati or anything, but, you know, financially things are looking really nice for me from a looking just at a purely passive perspective, right? So I want to continue to do that, but I also want to continue to foster things in the arts. I'm passionate about the arts, and, you know, my wife and I are trying to help, you know, new works come out. I'm working with writers to create new pieces of theater.
Awesome. What is your favorite book on business or money?
Well, I would say Rich Dad, Poor Dad, but I know that that's probably what everybody says. So I think what's going to be is a book that I just got recently. One of my partners gave it to me as a gift for the holidays, and it's Principles. So it's Ray Dalio's new book, and it's a big book, and I think it's going to be phenomenal. So I haven't even cracked it open yet. I just got it a couple weeks ago, but looking forward to that one.
All right, good. And last one, what has been your biggest aha moment?
Keystone concept number one, you know, don't trade your time for money.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa, like, I guess I kind of always knew that in the back of my head, but I never really like thought about it and said, wow, you know what? I could generate this. It's interesting because when I started to think about it, when I was in Miami, I realized I already had some. I had invested in a Broadway show. And I had the property in Brooklyn, which we were renting at that point because we kept it when we moved. And that was generating positive cash flow. I also figured, hey, if that I had a vacation home in Connecticut that I had built, when I did that, I didn't know what I was doing and it wasn't supposed to be a rental. But I figured maybe at some point that would be able to produce passive income. So, but I just had never really like thought about it that way for one reason or another. And I said, wow, you know, if I can do that, and I can replace what my W-2 income was, that's going to give me a ton of freedom. And that was a big aha moment.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Matt. Appreciate your time today and your answers and insight to everything. Of course, we wish you luck on the book sales and look forward to pick one up ourselves.
Great. I'll send you guys a copy. And thanks for having me on.
Okay. Thanks for coming on with us today, Matt. This has been another episode of the Wealth Watchers podcast. I'm your host, Adam Lendy, for my co-host, Justin Hoggett, and I. Thanks for stopping by.
All right, guys. Enjoy that winter, and until next time.
This has been the Wealth Watchers podcast. If you enjoyed this content, please subscribe and leave a review on your podcast player of choice. Join us on Facebook, where our members and guests are actively engaging in discussions on wealth-growing strategies by searching for Wealth Watchers Community on Facebook.